Behind the Wheel with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
Oh, here we are going to go for a ride. And this week, Pete, you're definitely going to take us for a ride in this Range Rover Evoque.
Oh, definitely. You'll love it.
We talked about it endlessly last week.
That's right. And then we ran out of time. But these things happen because we have so much fun talking about other stuff.
Exactly.
And then you think, wait a minute, we didn't cover everything.
The Range Rover Evoque's on the cutting room floor.
Oh, no, it's not. It's a beautiful little car. I loved it, actually.
Really good. Now, we promise, going to take you around the block in the Range Rover.
And I reckon if you're in the mood for a Range Rover, there's a way of getting into the brand and not having to pay absolute top dollar, which you would do for one of the big clompers.
You're right. And it's a genuine Range Rover, isn't it? Like, it does all those Range Rover-y things.
Lovely.
Climbs mountains and does the luxury thing. Yep. So, yeah, we're going around the block in that. We're also going to take you around the block in a very popular car from Nissan. It's not the world's best-selling SUV, which, of course, is the Nissan X-Trail, but it's bigger brother, the Pathfinder, which has been around for years. Used to be more rugged and more sort of off-road focused. Now it's definitely built for an American market.
Yes, it is.
Built in the USA, in fact. Big seven-seater to take on the likes of your Mazda CX-9s and Toyota Klugers.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to, well, have a crack at it and see if it's worth stumping up the family dollars to get yourself into a Pathfinder.
Mm, good idea.
Simon Lai, he's been driving a car that I've been desperate to get my hands on and have yet to do it, from Alfa Romeo, the Giulia. And I know there's a few variants, including the Quadrilla
Hurdle.
That's it, the fast one. I'm not sure if he's got that one.
Was it Quattrofoglio or something? I think it means four leaves, like a clover. I don't know.
Baba da boopy. Anywho,
Alfa Romeo. Bada bang. There we are.
They're on the show, along with Porsche. Now, Porsche Mission E, you'll have heard us talking about that car many times. You'll have seen the shots of it on the website, and it is possibly one of the most stunning-looking Porsches I've ever seen.
Yeah, nice, very nice. It's very you, actually, Chris.
I could see myself in
one. I think so,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, maybe one of these days is a test car, at least.
Well, who knows? But we do know Mission E is no longer a concept, but will be put into production. It's been given a name. So Chris Jordan from Porsche Cars Australia, he'll be along to tell us what that name is.
Yes, and I saw Joel driving something enormous. In fact, is it a car? Is it a truck? Is it an ocean liner? I don't know what it is, but it's huge. And Joel is going to tell us all about it. All I can tell you is it comes from Iveco, and he says it's pretty good stuff.
Indeed. That's on the way in a couple of minutes. Kia, they've pulled the wraps off an all-new electric car themselves in Seoul last weekend. They're calling it the Niro. Mm-hmm. Will it come to Australia? It's got a range of about 450K, so it's certainly batting in the right market. And there's a possibility we might see it here. So we'll grill Kevin Hepworth from Kia a little later, get all those details as well.
Yep.
Rachel Frank goes along. She wants to chat mobile phones and cars.
Oh, that's a vexed issue, isn't it?
Isn't it just? But when it comes to vexed issues, nobody does them better than our very own Rachel Frank.
She's marvellous. So witty. How many times have you sat at the lights and thought, wait, it's turned green and 2.5 cars got through because everybody else was on their phones and just kept you waiting?
Put the bloody phone down.
Yes.
Alrighty, lots to motor through on this week's show, and taking a little bit of a left turn now, Peter, and we're stepping up in the world. We're stepping up in gross vehicle mass.
Oh, yes.
In length,
yes.
In height,
that's
in width.
Right. And in fact, to get into the cabin of one, you have to step up more than you do into the regular car,
That's
SUV.
Exactly right. Mm. Now, of course, many know the motoring prowess of one Joel Helms.
Oh, yes.
How he's just like a rash across everything that the Australian motor industry has thrown out ever.
He is, yep.
But he also has another feather in his cap, and it's got to do with little big trucks. So here he is with his hat on and the feather in. Joel Helms, g'day. How are you going?
Good. How are we, guys?
Good, very Joel. Well. What have you been driving?
I have had the biggest of the big, Australia's largest van. It's the Iveco Daily 70C.
Right.
Now, you know, you see your average sort of Toyota Hiace out there and...
Your Ford Transits and your Fiat Ducatos and those sorts of things.
You can get a ton. Basically, you get a ton in the back of those things. Yeah. And you've got somewhere around 6, potentially up to about 9 square metres of storage of, you know, cargo space in the back. Mm-hmm.
This Iveco,
it's got up to 20 square metres in the back.
That's
unbelievable.
Absolutely massive. And you can take, a massive load. You're talking about 4-ton load in the back and still tow 3.5 tons off the tow bar as well. So It's a hefty old van.
Yeah. Absolutely. Is it? Can you drive it on the road? Do you need like a bloke out the front with a flag and a little red light
and a whistle?
Here he comes.
Well, probably the hardest thing with it. It's over 7.5 meters long.
Hmm.
So basically, trying to park it, and the one I had didn't have the reverse camera.
Oh no.
You cannot buy one of these vans without having the reverse camera because just parking it is impossible. You've got this massive overhang off the back wheels and basically no rear visibility as you'd expect.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd need a pair of binoculars, wouldn't you, to actually kind of look down the back of the van and see where it ends.
Get the reverse camera, that's the lesson. But yeah, no, a really impressive van. And we've spoken about the Iveco Dailies a few times in the past. So much better than a lot of the other vans that are around where you're sitting on top of the engine.
Yep.
And same goes for light trucks as well. You're sitting sort of on top of the engine. Whereas with this van, you've actually got a bonnet. You've got the engine up in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot quieter and drives a lot more car-like. I was just really impressed with this vehicle.
Right. What sort of motor powers it?
So it's a Euro 6 compliant engine, so that's good news.
Mm-hmm.
That's beyond a lot of the cars that are available today.
Yes, it is.
It's a 3-litre turbo diesel, four-cylinder, but 180 horsepower. And, you can get a 6-speed manual as standard. Mine came with the 8-speed auto, which comes from ZF. We know that brand very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just drives along really nicely. It's not a hard vehicle to drive, aside from the fact that it's very tall and very long and very wide. And I can imagine you wouldn't want to drive it in a stiff breeze without a load in.
Look out.
Yeah.
And if you decided you needed one of these and you couldn't bear to live without one, how much are you going to have to stump up?
Well, with these types of vehicles, once we start getting up into trucks and things like that, we don't actually get the price tag.
No.
You have to see your dealer. But I would presume it would be somewhere around 6 figures.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
okay.
You'd think so. Joel, I saw another Iveco van, but I don't think it was quite this vast in traffic during the week.
Yep.
And I must say, it looked terrific, but it certainly was very sizable and... I wonder, is there a smaller version, or can a prospective buyer go into the showroom or go into the factory and say, I want this, but I don't want the 7-metre version? How about if you do a half length?
Well, if you go and take a look at utenvanguide.com.au, where we've published the review, on my test vehicle, it actually had, in sign writing, the sizes of the smaller variant.
Variants,
so
right.
It's actually on the side of it. And it ranges everything from that 9 square metres right up to, 18 and 16 and 18 and then up to the 20, which was the big one that I had. So, and really, the front half of the vehicle doesn't change that much. Obviously, the height, the roof height does change on the smaller ones. But, you've got an Iveco Daily for whatever size you might need.
Mm.
This particular van that I drove with the high roof, you've got 2.1 metres of standing space in the rear.
Wow.
So,
have a party in the back.
But if you had a situation where you needed a little workshop, if you were one of those type of contractors that maybe you needed to cut pipes or do some electrical work or something, you can stand right up in it and have a little workbench and everything. So very
amazing.
Clever vehicle.
Very amazing. Nice indeed. Mm. The review again is at utenvan.com.au.
utenvanguide.com.au.
Go check it out. Look, we could talk all day. Just very quickly, I know you had your eye on a truck that's crossed the United States and done some pretty incredible fuel economy figures in the process.
Yeah, well, of course, a lot going on in the heavy vehicle space in regards to electric vehicles and in regards to fuel economy. Operators want to cut their costs. They want to not spend so much money on fuel. And when you're buying hundreds and hundreds of litres of it, it's even more prevalent and more important than cars. But, this is the Shell Starship. It's a super aerodynamic truck. It's an amazing-looking thing. It's done a 3,700K trip across the United States, and it weighs 33 tonnes, which is a pretty good weight. It's come in at a pretty good figure, 43.7 litres per 100, which is, of course, atrocious for a car.
Yes.
But then when you look at it and you multiply, a 1.5-litre car, a 1.5-tonne car that's using 10 litres, or something that is, it weighs 16 times more and it uses 4 times as much fuel, it's actually pretty good, isn't it, when you look at it that way? And as compared to a regular truck that doesn't have the low rolling resistance tyres, doesn't have the aerodynamics, the freight efficiency, about 250% more efficient than a standard truck. So I think this is definitely something that the industry will look more at in coming times, just trying to squeeze more and more out. They're probably going to become more of an issue as fuel prices start to to creep higher and higher.
I keep hearing, and I love your thoughts on this, about autonomous trucks in particular. I keep hearing they're going to be what's autonomous on the roads before cars. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, truck sales in Australia and other developed markets are just going through the roof. And before there was, so you're looking at about a 30% increase this year in new truck sales in Australia. And somebody's got to drive all those trucks. And the operators were already having trouble getting good quality, safe, professional, well-trained drivers. So there is a driver shortage, and that's probably what is going to drive autonomy. It's probably going to be a long time before we really see it in Australia. What we may see in Australia at some point is platooning. So a group of four trucks will leave Brisbane and drive to Melbourne. There'll be one driver in the front truck, that type of thing. You won't see local delivery trucks and that type of thing. You know, your local Woolworths delivery truck being driven by a robot for a long, 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 long time. If ever. But I think it will be, and a lot of the times, you know, in the car industry, you talk a lot about things being developed in motorsport. That's true. But a lot of the time, things that end up in our family cars have been developed in a commercial sense, in trucks or buses and that type of thing, and it eventually filters down to cars. But, it'll happen, but it's not going to happen very quickly, I don't think.
It'll happen, but not overnight.
The Pantene.
The Pantene ad. That's exactly right. Joel Helms, on that note, thank you very much. We'll chat next week.
Thanks, guys.
The ideal family vehicle has seven seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With seven seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au. Noticed all the light commercial vehicles on the roads today? Well, we figured this booming segment of the market needed a new focus. Ute and Van Guide provides unbiased reviews of new utes and vans available on the Australian market. We drive and use these vehicles as they were intended to ensure you get the best information and opinions based on real-world experience before you decide which new ute or van to purchase. And stay up to date with the latest commercial vehicle news too at uteandvanguide.com.au.
Behind the wheel.
Behind the wheel, where motoring starts.
Yes, we're going to take you around the block in the 2018 version of the Range Rover Evoque shortly.
Yeah.
Also, the Nissan Pathfinder is going to be wheeled out of the garage.
Yep.
We'll give you a crack in that as well. We'll hear about the Alfa Romeo Giulia. We'll talk mobile phones and cars with Rachel Franco. But right now, more importantly, we've got to turn our attention to the fabulous sports car maker that is Porsche. Mm-hmm. We are, of course, huge fans of the brand. Both
very much
being
so.
Owners of the vehicles many years ago.
In times gone by.
Still long to have a 911 in the garage.
And you've never lived until you've been on a Porsche drive day, I reckon.
That's a very good point.
Oh, my gosh, that was so much fun.
Wasn't it just? Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've got some big news out of Porsche over the weekend, a couple of announcements, and to give us the detail on that, it's the one and only Chris Jordan. Welcome back to Behind the Wheel. Chris, how are you, man?
Yeah, good.
Excellent.
Good to be here.
Always great to have you, and always excited to talk about Porsche Mission E. Now, this was a concept car, I think, probably previewed for the first time a couple of years ago, maybe even a little longer. One of the most stunning-looking things you've ever seen. It's a four-door car from Porsche. Not your Panamera, but their first foray into all-electric motoring.
Mm.
And the Mission E, no longer a concept, been confirmed for production, and I believe it now has a name, not Mission E.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, and given that this concept car has garnered so much attention over the last couple of years since it was first unveiled, the name of the concept car has sort of bedded down into everyone's consciousness. But as it is a concept car, that was the name of the concept car. The name for the production car has now been confirmed, and that name is Taycan.
Taycan.
And not often that Porsche adds a model to the lineup, so it was a big occasion, and the occasion coincided with the 70th birthday of the Porsche sports car, because it was the 8th of June 1948 that the very first Porsche 356 was registered.
Mm-hmm.
And 70 years on, at quite a moment, the big ceremony at the Porsche Museum in Stuttgart we confirmed the name and the fact that the car will go into production. Our first battery electric vehicle. We've obviously got some plug-in hybrids in the range, but sure, this will be our first battery electric vehicle, as you say, a four-door sports car.
Now, Taycan, it's got, you know, kind of connotations of Macan and kind of sounds like it fits quite nicely into those kind of suite of names that Porsche has, Panamera and Cayman and all those sorts of things. There's a meaning behind Taycan, though, isn't there?
There is, yes. It's a fast young horse derived from an Asian language.
Right.
And you're right, it does actually fit in with the other Porsche nameplates, so I think it's fitting, and like I say, it's not often that a nameplate is added to the lineup. So
yeah,
it's big news, and you'll see a lot of news around Taycan in 2019, and then the car will arrive in Australia in 2020.
Okay, so excellent. A couple of years off, year and a half maybe, and we'll be seeing it here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Excellent. Another car I would love to see here. Don't know whether it will happen or not, because at this stage it's only a concept. I know you've built them previously, the 911 Speedsters. Remember there was one, Pete, that used to get around Melbourne? It was red.
Yes.
I think it was based on the 1990 911. It was kind of that, around that era, and it was just the most stunning-looking thing. Well, a similar concept, Chris, has been released over the weekend, the 911 Speedster concept.
Yeah, it was definitely a big event Friday night in Stuttgart, and also a concept was unveiled, the 911 Speedster concept. So you're right, I believe there's been 8 versions of the Speedster previously,
right?
And they have a very passionate following. A lot of people already, although it's only a concept car, not confirmed for production yet, already a lot of interest at our dealerships, people wanting to get their hands on one of those, because they're usually quite low volume in their production and quite special and retain their value or appreciate even. So, yeah, you're right, that design does turn heads. The open top, often cut down windows, and really powerful engine. So that's another exciting one, and we'll have to stay tuned for more news on that one.
Yep, excellent. And I don't know, just a rumour that's floating around at the moment, confirm or deny, a coupe version of the Porsche Cayenne, I suppose, to tackle the likes of the BMW X6 and Audi Q8.
No news from Porsche on that, but a lot of speculation online about a Cayenne coupe, so not much I can say, but certainly... For the car fans out there, if you hit Google, there's all sorts of stories on there for you to have a read on.
You must get some. I reckon Porsche would probably be the one that would cop the most fake news, I reckon, around the traps, because everyone wants to kind of get the jump on the, you know, we've released this kind of detail on Porsche first. I'm sure you've seen some weird and wacky stories over your times.
Yes, certainly have. You're right. I guess it's a nice problem to have that so many people are interested in our brand and so many people are passionate about what's to come. A lot of people are really interested in the cars we have on sale now, but clearly a lot of people are so passionate about Porsche, be it to own one or just because they love it and they're fans of one and they aspire to owning one day, it's great to talk to people about the existing lineup, but then they often want to know about the next one. So we can talk about this 911, and then they want to ask about the next 911 and so forth.
And it's amazing to think back on how the company has evolved since that first one was registered all those years ago. Not really all that many years ago for a mega brand to evolve.
For sure. And that's why we're specifically saying it's 70 years of Porsche sports car, because Ferdinand Porsche was actually doing a lot of work well before that date. He made the world's first hybrid automobile. He designed the Volkswagen Beetle. He did a lot of work for other companies before he gave his famous quote of, I looked around for the sports car of my dreams and couldn't find one, so I decided to build it myself, and that was at 356. So we've been building sports cars for 70 years, but in terms of Ferdinand Porsche, his history goes back probably well over 100 years. Mm. So, but you are right that from that point on, the 356 and then the 911 that followed, and then from 2002 when the Cayenne came out, another thing that transformed the company, and it's something that we're conscious of right at the moment, because from the 23rd of this month, the third generation Cayenne goes on sale in Australia. So you're right, it's certainly evolved a long way since that first 356001 was registered in Gmund in Austria.
Excellent. Can't wait for the next sort of instalment. Lots of exciting things to come, and as always, we really value your time. Chris Jordan, Porsche Cars Australia, thanks for joining us today on Behind the Wheel.
No dramas, anytime.
Alrighty, I think we'll just head down to the garage now and do this Evoke thing you've been promising for the last 2 weeks.
Pete. Great idea. You're going to love it. Okay, now take a look at it. The 2018 Range Rover Evoke, and this time it's the five-door model, not the optional convertible. I've always liked the look of these. You know, when they were first released, they almost seemed too stylish to be a genuine SUV off-roader. That, of course, would be denying the Range Rover heritage, which I think you do at your peril. So, check it out. Flowing, flared lines over the wheel arches. Yep, combined with amazing sports wheels. They really look the part, don't they? But just don't scratch them, I beg you. The face, glamorous as always. I think slightly changed headlights, not sure. There's an evolution taking place. And, of course, the angled roofline towards the back. And I like that light treatment. Now, coming to the rear door hatch, here we go. Well, the boot is reasonably generous, and the legroom in the back is not quite as generous. Just about enough, though. Now, I can get my golf clubs in here at a pinch. You might like to take the driver out of the bag, though, and there's always the option of folding down the rear seats. So it's pretty good. It's nice and functional. From the driver's seat, oh, it's refreshingly functional up there. The audio-visual phone connection, the Touch Pro, is lightning fast. It does say Land Rover. Oh, wait, I thought this was a Range Rover. Oh, well, just in case, you take your pick. It's kind of a combination of both. But anyway, there's a glove box of sorts, giving the feeling of space. The circular gear selector disc rises up from the panel between the front seats when you start up. I'm driving the diesel model, the Ingenium Twin Turbocharged SD4. This is the HSE, don't you know, top of the range with 9-speed auto. Surprisingly fleet of foot too, or tyre. The cabin, well, beautifully stitched leather seating, comfortable, highly adjustable. Those little lighting touches are very nice around the door trims. They just make you feel at home. Don't know why, don't know how. Maybe not have chosen purple, but hey, you can change that, I'm sure. I'd have liked deeper cup holders, maybe a few more storage bins as well. Overall, though, it's pretty functional. And if you're in the mood for a panoramic sunroof, relax, chillax. There's a huge one installed letting in heaps of light. So there you have it, a compact SUV, the Range Rover Evoke. Just the right size for most city use, I reckon. Functional, upmarket, and all in all, good fun.
Owners of Japanese cars can now complete the look of their vehicles with new Japanese domestic market number plates. Available in various states and territories across Australia, Altrex Auto Accessories has been quick to expand its range of market-leading number plate protectors to include the new Japanese style. Providing weather protection along with theft protection when used in conjunction with anti-theft screws, the Altrex number plate protectors are made from top-quality high-impact acrylic, and the Altrex product cannot be beaten for durability, and with Colorbond non-rusting clips, they're quickly and easily fitted. Order JDM number plate protectors from the Altrex Auto Accessories online store now at altrex.com.au. For the latest truck and bus industry news, visit heavyvehicles.com.au. We bring you coverage of the latest new models, new technologies, and issues that matter to owners and drivers. Read heavy vehicle reviews, and you can win some great truck-related prizes too. heavyvehicles.com.au. Truck and bus news every day.
Behind the wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
It was nice to finally get that drive around the block in the Range Rover Evoque.
Yes.
And yep. Good on your promises this week, which is nice.
Which is about time, isn't it? Yes, indeed. Yep, it was good fun.
Pathfinder on the way, Alfa Romeo Giulia on the way, cars and phones and how we keep them all apart. We're going to tackle that with Rachel Franco a little later. But right now, as we mentioned at the top of the show, it's been a bit of an electric car theme, of course, with Porsche going from concept car Mission E to the Taycan, as we just heard about before the break. Now, Kia, they're getting in on the Electric Vehicle Act. We kind of always knew they would.
Of course.
But RAP's taken off something pretty special across the weekend, and to give us a bit more detail, it's old mate Kevin Hepworth from Kia Cars Australia. G'day, Kev. How are you going, man?
Very well, thanks, guys.
Good to talk to you, Kevin. So you're going to be selling, maybe here, an all-electric car from Kia. And tell us about it. I think it's the Niro.
There's nothing decided on it, mate. Damien Meredith, our chief operating officer, has gone on record as saying that Kia's future lies with electric vehicles, Kia in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
We have no intention of running any hybrid vehicles, which he sees pretty much as a stepping stone towards electric. So we'll take a leap, go over the top of that, and head towards an electric future. So I can see the Niro being part of that future.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Niro, from the one shot I've seen of it, looks almost to be a bit sportage-y in its shape.
It's very, very much a sportage derivative vehicle. There is a hybrid version of it in the market already internationally,
mm-hmm.
And this is the next step. It's the fully electric, and yeah, it's the first of the SUV style, if you like, electric vehicles that we'd look at.
Now, would you would it be a completely different design on the inside, or would it be very similar? Because obviously, you know, when you've got batteries in the floor and a very small electric motor, suddenly you've got all this extra space that you may be able to bring into the interior. But that, of course, would take clean sheet design and probably a lot of money, I'd imagine. So is it easier to kind of, or I suppose, almost retrofit electric engines to vehicles that already exist?
It won't be an existing vehicle. You'd probably need to talk to the design team about that, as we haven't had anything along those lines shared with us. But
gotcha.
If you've got the opportunity to do something like this, it's not that difficult to maximise your benefit, if you like. And to do that, you would go with a fresh look to the interior.
Yep. Yeah, fair enough then.
Yes, it's a great opportunity and a huge, I suppose, spearheading a huge range in the future.
Well, there's possibilities. I mean, we were initially, I think, one of our early electric cars will probably be a small passenger vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the opportunity, of course, to have mid-sized passenger vehicles and small SUVs.
Yeah. So clearly the idea, as far as Kia's concerned anyway, is that we will have an all-electric future in due course.
We will have all-electric option in due course.
Options, yes.
I don't think it'll ever become, well, certainly not in my lifetime, an all-electric company.
Mm.
There's still a lot of life left in the old internal combustion engine yet.
Mm.
And there's new developments coming in all shapes and forms for that engine as well, with turbos and other Atkinson cycle add-on type technology. But the electrics do give you a very good urban, suburban vehicle option.
Yeah, indeed. Mm. And you're certainly not on your own going down that track. Of course, Jaguar are about to launch with the I-Pace in October. We know Volkswagen are coming, so it's exciting times ahead. I believe the Niro at this stage offering a fairly decent range too. I think I read 450-odd Ks off a charge.
That's always been the challenge, hasn't it, with yeah. electric vehicles? Mm. Like nobody wants to have to charge every night, if you like, or be restricted to a city 30K this way, 30K that way.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's where they started. But now, with fast charge, mains charging, and a 400-plus range, you're looking at a vehicle that's fairly practical.
Yeah,
that is practical, actually. Yeah. Nothing worse than being in an all-electric car and wondering whether you've just been a little heavy-footed on the way home and whether or not you're going to get there or if it's going to be a piece of elegant sculpture beside the roadway.
And also with the fact that, you know, you might have to kill about 5 hours in the coffee shop while you wait for it to charge.
Yeah, nothing nicer.
Or
make it 8 hours.
Well, mate, it's a bit hard when you've got to ring the missus and say, look, I've run out of charge on the way home. I'll be home tomorrow.
Yeah, good point. Kev, as always, it's great to talk to you. We look forward to seeing the Niro. If you want to see pics, you can head to our website right now, behindthewheel.com.au. Kevin Hepworth from Kia Cars Australia. We'll chat again soon, man.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, it's back to the garage, and this time into a car that, well, fuel economy's not high on it. It's a gender. We could put it like that. I think it's probably the nicest way to say.
That's a nice way to say it.
Okay, so back in the behind-the-wheel garage and confronted Peter with a very red and very large Nissan Pathfinder. This is the Series 2 Update Edition, and as you can see, it's got a bit of a new face. Doesn't look too bad.
Yeah, it does look very nice, actually. Now, this, I think, is the TI model, so that puts it at the top of the tree, top of the food chain.
Yep, it does indeed. And, look, I suppose it's a seven-seat family wagon,
yep,
competing with the likes of your, you know, your Toyota Kluger, mm-hmm, Mazda CX-9, okay, our car of the year from last year, and, of course, the car of the year from the year before that, the Kia Sorento.
Yep.
So you would imagine, from a money point of view, sitting at the top of the food chain, what would you guess be?
Well, I suppose in the 50s, you'd have to say, wouldn't you? I'm just trying to think what the Kia is. Is that in the sort of...
I think it's high 50s.
High 50s, I would
the
think.
Top of the range Kia is 59.
I was going to say, maybe topping out about 60.
Yeah, okay. Well, this actually isn't the very top of the range. There's a hybrid version of this car as well, which is more expensive.
Oh, yes.
Maybe just hold on to something, because we are standing. So yes. The price for this particular car is $66,190 before on-roads.
Oh, my gosh. So that makes it a very... In fact, even the train outside was excited. I just heard it beep its horn. Yeah, that makes it quite an expensive proposition. Do you think it lives up to the cost?
Well, I only just today did the investigation to find out what the cost of it was. Up until today, and I've had it almost a week now, I had it in my mind that it was about a mid-$40,000 car.
Oh,
I thought it might have been 47, 48 grand, yep. And I was thinking to myself, geez, that's good value. You know, yes, really, for that sort of money, that's really good value. But for $66,000, plus you're on road, so you're looking at 70 grand for a Nissan Pathfinder.
Oh, yes, it's a lot.
I don't think so. Look, there's no doubt about it. It's a nice car. It's got the 3.5-litre V6, which goes okay. It's hooked up to a horrible CVT gearbox.
Yes.
So that's a constantly variable transmission even like when the engine's got a bit of torque, it's not too bad, but it still sounds like there's a clutch slipping. It just doesn't feel right. Does the job, gets the car up to speed and everything, but I just can't like it. You know, the leather and the build quality is all very lovely. Come and have a look inside. Yep. You get all the bits and pieces. You've got electrically adjusted seats and you've got seat heaters and, you know, keyless entry and the nice leather and, you know, yes, it's a nice looking cabin.
It's nicely done inside, yeah. It's,
but
simple.
But showing its age a bit too, don't you think? Is sort of particularly around that centre console area.
Yeah. Yes, it is a little, actually. I agree with you there. But it's nicely done for what it is.
Yeah. But, look, I don't know. Your fuel economy ain't great at 10.1 litres per 100k. That's the official claim.
So
I'm up around the 14s.
Yes.
I did a big trip down the beach in it over the weekend, and economy did drop below 10, so it's not too bad out on the freeways. 202 kilowatts, 340 newton metres. Of course, it does have a 5-star ANCAP rating, but I just can't get past $66,190.
Let's have a look in the back.
Look, there's plenty of space. You know, and these back seats and particularly that middle row there, you can move that forward and it's really easy access. Mm. In fact, if you just click that little button there, you'll see how easy it is to get into the back seat. You just do that and then up it goes, slides out of the way, and you can see the bottom of the seat kind of comes out. It's really very, very well done. There's plenty of room in that third row.
Yep.
Personally, have a look at it. It's nice. You know, you've got TV screens in the back seats, and yeah, it's got some good bits and pieces. But for my money, I'd have a look at it and then go directly to your Mazda dealer and make sure you take the CX-9 for a drive.
Yep, absolutely. CX-9 or the Sorento, that's a terrific car too.
Australian families looking for the ideal vehicle for their needs are often left frustrated. Some vehicles seem to tick all the boxes but then cost the earth. Others are well priced but don't have the space or features that families need. Stop compromising, as there is an option that won't leave you wanting more. The new Havel H9. Boasting a 180kW turbo engine, 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability and 7-seat capacity, the Havel H9 just can't be beaten. Visit your local Havel dealership today or havel.com.au. Prevention is better than the cure, especially when it comes to replacing damaged headlights. That's why we recommend fitting Altrek skins to car, truck and motorcycle headlights. You've heard us talking about Altrek skins as a great way of protecting your car's paintwork. Well, it actually works just as well on your headlights.
Simply trim the shape and apply. Pick up a roll at your local auto parts store or order online now at altrex.com.au.
Behind the Wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
Oh yeah, we've got through an awful lot already and still more to get through, including how to get a phone out of a car permanently. We've got to kind of try and clean up these roads. There's too many people texting and driving and
yes.
and kind of, you know, focusing elsewhere as opposed to
yes,
the
not paying attention to the drive
in front of them.
Yep.
Anyway,
absolutely.
Rachel Frank will be along shortly to tackle that. We'll do a good product review too. Our mates at Alltrex Auto Accessories have come up with a brilliant new thing this week we'll tell you about. And right now, he's been described sometimes as a brilliant new thing and other times a lot worse. We won't go into that right now. It's the one and only Simon Lai.
Hello, boys. Good to talk to you again.
Hello,
always
Simon.
Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. You're very exotic this week, and we know that, you know, being exotic is something you're not afraid of doing. So tell us about your car.
I try to be. Well, it's an Alfa Romeo and a Giulia, and
nice.
I haven't really been in one for quite a while. I think the last one I drove was a Mito, M-I-T-O.
Yep.
This one is got a strange name, I'd say.
Yeah.
Sounds like an old girlfriend of yours.
Well, the last time I was in an Alfa Romeo, in fact, I was in it for about 5 minutes, and then I spent the next hour pushing it. Because they were pretty good at breaking down, and in fact, I've heard it said, I think it was a Top Gear phrase, where they said, you're not a true motoring enthusiast unless you've owned and pushed an Alfa at some stage in your life. I would hope that they've got their act together from a reliability point of view, and the new Alfa Romeo Giulia operates in temperatures above, I don't know, 24 degrees and below 5.
Yeah, I think they've moved far beyond that, but... In spite of that, they still have quite a prestigious name, and everyone thinks, "Oh, it's an Alfa Romeo." It just sounds nice, doesn't it? When you hear it,
it's just that Italian exoticism. And of course, Alfa Romeo this year have returned as a title sponsor for one of the Formula One teams, Sauber. So it's now Alfa Romeo Sauber. Haven't seen Alfa Romeo's name in Formula One for many years.
No.
So I think they're going to make a bigger comeback in 2020. And of course, it's all coming off the back of the success that has been based around this new car, the Giulia, which, you know, when it was first launched, was heralded as a genuine rival for Mercedes-Benz C-Class and BMW 3 Series and Audi A4 and the like. In your short time with it, do you reckon it's going to stack up to be as good as those cars?
That's hard to say. It is good, but I probably wouldn't put it right up there just yet. You know, just from the outside, it actually doesn't look like anything outstanding. It's quite like an ordinary sedan shape. I mean, that's not to say it's not good. It's just that there's nothing that really stands out, except for probably the grille. But the interior was really nice. The one I had a nice red and black interior, those red leather seats, and you know, the upholstery and the whole cabin really stands out. They've got nice soft touch panels, and the black parts were in a matte finish. So, you know, European cars are like, they're a bit understated, but still a little bit sophisticated.
Mm.
Yeah,
elegant,
gotcha.
Elegant and unsophisticated.
Yeah. Exactly.
Elegant and understated. Bit like
sometimes
us.
Sometimes unsophisticated like us. Now, you didn't have the Quadrifoglio. That was the really fast one.
I'm glad I didn't have to say it.
But you did you have the diesel or petrol four-cylinder?
No, it was a petrol one.
Yeah, okay.
And the range starts from about 60 grand, goes to about 72 for the 2-litre petrol,
yeah.
The 2-litre petrol or diesel. The other one, the V6 you mentioned, is like 150, so it's a different kettle of fish, that one. But yeah, it was great to drive. I found the drive itself was fantastic. It had really good power. You've got, 330 newton metres. It was quiet at the same time, you know, responsive, direct steering, all the stuff that you expect from it. Probably the only thing that I noticed was a bit strange was when you go to full lock, especially, you know, you're doing slow speed maneuvers and parking or whatever.
Yeah.
When you go to full lock, the wheels tended to grind against something. Not sure if it was the mudguard or whatever.
Oh.
But then I think I had a look underneath, and I think I put that down to the very wide 225 tyres.
Well, okay, but they're not meant to grind on bits of the
exactly.
car.
And
I
found that, you know, if you tried to force it, it kind of shifted the car a bit, which, you know, is a bit dangerous too. So that was a bit unfortunate.
Okay.
But back to the inside, that was quite nice to sit in. The rear seats have got like bucket seats in there, so your passengers will be nicely comfortable in there. The boot itself is, you know, got adequate space, nothing
too big or small. Although, the rear seats there were a little bit cramped. If you had, you know, a tall person in front driving, then, you know, you might be have a bit of limited leg room.
Sure. Now, does it kind of put you in the mood to sort of, you know, ogle, you know, hot young women while drinking shots of grappa beside a fountain somewhere?
Oh, goodness, I don't think it's allowed to do that.
No?
No, of course not. Married man and all.
Well, the music's nice anyway.
Where's that coming from?
Oh, it's from the heavens.
I'm just wondering, does it kind of make you feel like you want to get nasty in and kind of go all mafioso? Does it bring out the Italian in you?
Didn't cross my mind whatsoever.
Oh, Simon, I'm sorry. That music is so Moorish, isn't it? We can listen to it for hours.
Not my cup of tea.
No, nor mine, but never mind.
Okay, fine. Well, I'll take my music and my Alfa Romeo and I'll go home. Too much fun. Simon Lyon, thank you very much. We'll chat to you next week. Bye.
No worries. Bye.
Cheers.
Yes, indeed. It's product review time for our great mates at Alltrex Auto Accessories, and this week's is a pearler. Even the most cared for car will get the odd scratch and dent. It's just inevitable, isn't it? As painful and all as it is, it does happen. But thankfully, from our good mates at Alltrex, our car product of the week will take that pain away. It's the T-Cut ColorFast Scratch Remover. Now, the T-Cut technology in ColorFast Scratch Remover is enhanced by nanoparticles that allow for very easy application with excellent results. The colour pigments work with all shades of the colour, so even though the bottle you might get may not look like it's the exact match for your car, just the way it works means that it'll blend right in. You just basically rub it on and the scratches disappear. You can order T-Cut ColorFast Scratch Remover right now from the Alltrex Auto Accessories online store. It comes in black, green, silver, white, red or blue. Get this, only $13.99 and it's delivered to your door and you get back your scratch-free car. So get to it, alltrex.com.au. All right, everybody calm down. She's here. The phone's been going.
That's it, ever, yeah.
When's Rachel? And when's Rachel? Well, she's now, all right, everybody?
We want to
everybody?
Hear Rachel. All right, then. Here she is.
Oh, never fear. I am here.
God love
Hello,
you.
Hello, boys.
Hello,
Rachel
there.
Franco, I hope you're well. What's been happening in your world?
Doing great. Not much, you know. Same old, really.
Excellent. I do hope you've been staying off your phone while travelling in your car, because I think maybe up your neck of the woods in New South Wales, there might be some new technology in place to catch you out.
Yes, I always resist the urge to touch my phone when I'm driving, and even more so now, because in New South Wales they're introducing new cameras that can detect and will photograph you when you're on your mobile phone while you're driving.
Okay, so is this to kind of nab someone who's hurtling down the freeway at 110 kilometres an hour, seeing if they've got any more likes on Facebook, or are these cameras that are positioned at intersections to catch people reading the latest Sydney Morning Herald article while the traffic lights are red?
I think they're mobile devices, but I have read that they can implement the technology into existing cameras and whatnot.
Right, okay.
So they could literally end up being everywhere.
What sort
which
of...
I don't think is a bad thing. We had an incident up here a few months ago where a guy was on his phone, checking his phone, and actually ploughed into a random breath testing unit that had been set up.
That's right, I remember that.
Unfortunately.
Yeah,
we ran that in the news down here in Victoria. Yeah.
Mm, well, he hit two police officers, and one of them, unfortunately, had to have his foot and part of his leg amputated.
Isn't that dreadful? Yeah.
So it was awful. And I think sort of stuff happens all the time that we just don't hear about. So I know the penalties are quite heavy and they potentially may even be increasing them. I'd have to double check that. But I think it's more the fact that they have found it in the past very hard to catch people in the act, but also to prove it.
Yes.
And this technology means that they'll have a photo of you holding your phone. Like, there'll be evidence and you won't be able to...
There's no getting away from that, no.
Done like
no,
it,
no, absolutely.
Now look, as you say, it's absolutely, I think, you know, they get a little bit crazy about speed sometimes, I think, with two or three Ks over. But this actually genuinely poses a risk to the health and safety of you know, the wider community. And if there's a way to get these idiots to actually look at the road in front of them as opposed to their phone, I think, you know, more power to them, and let's hope it gets rolled out right across the country.
Well, I just don't think people realise how dangerous it is. And, I mean, you know, the argument might be that, you know, you've got, we've always had sort of stereos and CDs in the car and stuff, CD players, and, you know, that diverts your attention. But I think that the difference with that sort of stuff is that you can still, like, I know when I'm changing tracks on the CD player, for example, it's a tactile button that you're pressing, so you can actually still keep your eyes on the road. It's not great, obviously, to be that distracted, but you can still maintain vision when you're driving, whereas when you are trying to do something on your mobile phone, you cannot, and I defy anyone to sort of argue the point, you cannot maintain full
focus.
Yeah, absolutely, when you're trying to sort of focus on touching a flat screen that has no tactile nature to it.
Yeah, exactly right. I know what you mean.
And all it literally takes is for your eyes to be diverted for 3 seconds, and anything can happen. Anyone can change lanes in front of you. A child can run out after a ball. Anything. And I think a lot of people criticise the police for, you know, revenue raising and all that sort of stuff, and maybe in some instances that is the case. But I really do believe with stuff like this, this isn't a revenue raiser. This is to really protect people and protect motorists and pedestrians and everyone that uses the roads in New South Wales, basically from themselves.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Now, I know it's pretty common occurrence across the country. You know, the P-platers out there go and get their first car. Tends to be a cheap one because, you know, most mums and dads expect them to have, you know, a little bit of a fender bender here or there, so you don't want the flashiest car. But that tends to mean that they're a little older and in most instances don't have Bluetooth technology.
Exactly.
There's ways to retrofit that, though, isn't there?
They're just units that you can stick in your car somewhere. I've got one that clips onto my sun visor.
Nice.
And it's like a Bluetooth thing where you can at least talk on the phone through it. And you have to make sure that you've got your phone in a proper
holder
that's stuck to the dashboard somewhere.
Yep.
But you can also get a Bluetooth system retrofitted through the stereo.
Right.
So then I can at least still play my music through the stereo. I can make calls and take them through the stereo. And it's usually just like a little extra piece that maybe sits on your steering wheel that you can control everything.
Yeah, okay.
So that's a good idea. You can actually do. It just depends on how much money you want to spend.
Yes, because, of course, with some of the things, it doesn't help you if you wish to initiate a phone call because they don't give you the ability to dial
that's
it up
without
touching
the phone.
So you can't so you can't do that. So so there's a few little hurdles to overcome, but it's worth doing. It's
absolutely
certainly worth, has to be done.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think too, a lot of people use their GPS from their through their phone. Mm. You know, so even just to have something where you can, you know, at least have that going without too much physical interaction with the device is always a good thing. But, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I think just leave your phone in your bag, put it in the back and just don't touch it at all.
Yeah, I think sound advice indeed. Mm. We're out of time. We could go on all day. Alltrex.com.au, I reckon. They've got some groovy phone holders and Bluetoothy type things.
So.
Mm.
Yeah,
that.
Say so.
And look, I mean, if Rachel Franco had her own website, we'd tell you to go there too, but she doesn't. So instead, go to behindthewheel.com.au. Download next week's podcast because she's going to be back.
Oh, she will.
Oh, yes.
Ooh.
Bigger and better than ever.
There we go.
All right. Dun, dun.
On that note, we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Havel's just released a new family seven-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV, boasting a 180-kilowatt turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au. Owners of Japanese cars can now complete the look of their vehicles with new Japanese domestic market number plates. Available in various states and territories across Australia, Altrex Auto Accessories has been quick to expand its range of market-leading number plate protectors to include the new Japanese style. Providing weather protection along with theft protection when used in conjunction with anti-theft screws, the Altrex number plate protectors are made from top-quality high-impact acrylic, and the Altrex product cannot be beaten for durability, and with Colorbond non-rusting clips, they're quickly and easily fitted. Order JDM number plate protectors from the Altrex Auto Accessories online store now at altrex.com.au.